This is the band that was regarded by many as the greatest of all time, the late Glenn Miller and his AAF band. We'll be listening to some of their great music, and we'll be interviewing one of their stars, Johnny Desmond. Welcome to A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands, brought to you tonight by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks, where you'll save big as Chevrolet clears the floor for 74. This is Arnold Dean on A One-Night Stand with the Big Band.
Hail the men, the band, the guns in the sky. Lift your old chapeau to each and every guy. To his courage in the blue and the things he learned to do. He's a part of a team and right on the beam for you and you and you. Hail the men, the band, the guns in the sky. The men with wings as they go thundering by. Everyone's a lucky seven and they give them good from heaven. Hail the men that man the guns in the sky.
This is part two of a series of programs with Glenn Miller. Last month, of course, we interviewed Lee Knowles, one of the original trumpet players with the Miller Civilian Band. This month, an interview with then-Sergeant Johnny Desmond, one of the great stars of the big band era and still very much a star in the recording industry today. And we'll talk about Glenn Miller's AAF band. It took us quite a while before we could get together with Johnny Desmond. He's still a very busy celebrity. But finally, on one of those days when there was a brownout and the air conditioner in his personal manager's office was running at about 80% of its capacity, we got together to meet Johnny Desmond for the first time in New York City. Johnny told us that he was born Johnny DeSimone in Detroit on November 14th. But at the age of 11, his family discovered that he had a marked singing talent. He's developed it a great deal over the years. We'll interview Johnny Desmond after we listen to something by Captain Glenn Miller and the Army AAF Band. That's the Army Air Forces Training Command Orchestra, with a vocal by Sergeant Johnny Desmond and the crew chiefs. Thank you.
shadows from above.
Point Sienna.
Somehow I feel the jungle heat. Grows a rhythmic savage beat.
Love is everywhere, it's magic, perfume fills the air.
To and fro you sway, my heart's in time, I've learned to care. Dawning day,
I'll learn to love forever, come what may.
Captain Glenn Miller and the Army Air Force's Training Command Orchestra, Point Sienna, with a vocal by Sergeant Johnny Desmond and the crew chiefs. You'll meet Johnny in just a moment. Clear the floor for 74. Now is the time to visit Russo Chevrolet. They're moving out the 73s to make room for the exciting 74s. You'll find big savings on all the popular Chevy models, but that's not all. Russo is featuring special deals on their stock of used and demonstrator Chevrolets. Now, wouldn't you like to own a durable, completely reconditioned, and clean used car from Russo? The demonstrators have been used by Russo salesmen themselves and have always been subject to the best care. Russo used cars are thoroughly checked and repaired by trained mechanics, so you can be sure you'll have a reliable car you'll be proud to own. Either car you choose, used or demonstrator, Russo is offering you savings of up to $1,200 on some cars. Don't wait another day. Visit Russo Chevrolet soon and help them clear the floor for 74. The selection is great and the savings are fantastic. That's Russo Chevrolet, just minutes from Hartford. Take I-91 to the Bradley exit, then your first exit to Russo Chevrolet. That's across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Johnny Desmond breezed in from his home in Long Island to get together with us for this interview. There we were, sitting on this very warm day in the office of his personal manager. To begin with, we were curious when his family discovered this singing talent at the age of 11. Was it because Johnny Desmond was singing at weddings or in a church choir? We asked him, were you a precocious youngster at all?
I never sang at weddings. I was never precocious. I never sang in a church choir. My daddy had a grocery store, and I used to sing around the grocery store. And I was sweeping up or, you know, fixing a fruit display or something, and I used to sing. And we had a customer whose son happened to work on the radio station in Detroit, and she said, you know, that son of yours is a good singer. He said to my father, and my father said, yeah, well, he always sings, you know, he likes to sing, he sings all the time. She said, well, do you mind if I have my son take him down to the radio station? He says, no, that's, if he wants to go, that's nice, let him go. So I went to the radio station and auditioned for a gentleman that had a show. His name was Uncle Nick. And he liked me, and I went right to work for him.
How old were you then?
I guess I was 11. And I was a boy soprano then, too. And I used to sing very, very high. And I was known as the Italian John McCormick. That's what he used to call me. Everybody had
right?
a nickname.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Then, unfortunately, as happens with young men at that age, you know, you had to look forward to your voice changing. When that came about, did it look like the end of the career?
Boy, it looked like the end of the world. It was right in the middle of a song called I'm Laughing. It was a very unfunny matter. My voice decided to just crack and change right at that moment. And I was shattered because I thought my singing life would be over also. But it didn't turn out that way. I waited about 4 years, and then my voice settled into a baritone range, which disappointed me because I wanted to be a tenor. And after the voice change, I started to study with the Detroit Conservatory of Music with a great teacher named Carl Mann. And my one big question to him every day that I came to study was, will I be a tenor, you know? He says, well, we don't know yet. We've got to find out where the voice settles. I said, well, if I'm not going to be a tenor, then I don't want to sing, you know? And he said, well, we'll see. We'll see. And we worked. And by the time I became a baritone, he had me interested in singing again. And I'm glad I did become a baritone. I said, think, because baritones have worked a lot steadier than...
That's for sure. John, it's a little out of context here, but I just want to move ahead and play a record here at this point. Something from an album called Marvelous Miller Moods. And we'll be talking more about the Glenn Miller Band as we follow chronologically the rest of your life. But you have a number of things in here that I'm extremely partial to. But there's one particular one. Have you any favorite record? I have to see if you hit the same one that you made with the Glenn Miller Band. Is there one that stands out?
Well, I think I like Long Ago and Far Away very, very
That's
much.
The one.
then I knew that all I longed for was you.
Let's talk about the recording of that one. Do you remember the session?
No, because all these songs that you're talking about that were done from the Glenn Miller Library were done on radio broadcasts. Now, that's another one of the great things about Glenn Miller. The fact that everything that you hear that was done while we were in the Army, every one of those selections were done one time through on a live radio broadcast over the Armed Forces Network.
And yet here they stand up 30 years later as absolutely beautiful.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. In that period when your voice was developing into the baritone range, did you continue to work at all? Is that when you got into radio drama?
Yes, that's when I started singing. Well, I stopped singing and I started to... I happened to be at a radio station called WXYZ in Detroit where...
The Lone Ranger station.
That's right. Yes. And the gentleman that I was doing some work for said, because your voice has changed and you can't sing anymore, it doesn't mean that you don't have to participate in broadcast. Do a dramatic role every once in a while. I said, love it. I said, in what? He said, to the Lone Ranger or the Green Hornet, because that's the station that was broadcasting both of those shows. And every once in a while, when a kid part would come along that I could do without too much strain on the voice, the man gave it to him. His name is James Jewell. James Jewell is now in Chicago. He's the guy behind the great success of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Go way back into radio. He's one of the great men.
When did you form your own group, a quartet? Was that 1930?
Well, that was during that period. Uh-huh. James Jewell, he allowed us to do whatever we wanted. He had a choir of about 40 kids where we would all sing together. And out of that choir, I formed a quartet called the Downbeats, three boys and a girl. And we used to work at their time and their station, and we would be spotted every once in a while on their broadcasts. And we used to do club dates on Saturday nights with the different bands around Detroit. And the Downbeats became quite a well-known group. And I used to copy all the Merrimack arrangements, you know, so we sounded exactly like the old Merrimacks. And when Bob Crosby came through Detroit looking for a vocal group, he auditioned my group. And we went on the road, and he changed our names to the Bobolinks.
And I think that's the name that'll ring a bell with a great many people.
Bob Crosby, Bobcats, and the Bobolinks. And that was the original Bobolink group.
And I understand that the young lady who traveled with the group for a while, but ultimately left to be replaced by a young lady who became your wife.
Yes, Ruth Keddington. We found her in Salt Lake City.
When did you get married?
We got married a couple of years after that, just before I went into the Army.
About 42 or so?
Yeah, January 3rd, actually, 1942.
Show business people are not supposed to be married 30
plus years. That's what they say, but here we are. We're going into, we've just done 31, and if it looks the way it does, we'll go another 31.
Good for you. What about the family? Do you have children?
We have two daughters, Patricia and Diane. Patricia just got married, and Diane is in the record business.
It's going to be kind of difficult for some people to accept Johnny Desmond as a grandfather. Are you prepared for that?
Well, I'm prepared for anything. I'd say my career has gone in all directions. I don't think a grandfather should scare me any.
Did you ever have any periods when you starved, as so many show business people have to?
Now, I've been very lucky. I've never starved, but I've had very many disappointments. I had a career that was very exciting. Because when I came out of the Army, I was a G.I. Sinatra, and I had so many opportunities thrust upon me, and I just wasn't ready for the model, and I've seen it happen in the years since I went through it. I've seen it happen to five or six different people. Success comes to you when you're not ready for it, and consequently, you just fall apart when the chips are down, and you can't deliver, because you're not really geared to handle the problems of a career at that point. And if you have proper management, they can ease you through it. But if you don't have proper management, you've got to suffer all the problems that happen to a young singer that becomes disillusioned. You're thrown to the wolves, more or less. And if you have the talent and you have the courage and the guts, you survive it and you learn something from it and you become stronger. I was able to go to Chicago and become a member of the Breakfast Club, Don McNeil's Breakfast Club, for 7 years. And during that period, I found myself all over again. And I found my values as a person, as a performer, and as a parent also.
So many people came through these difficult times with scars, and I'm sure Sinatra has, and many people seem to know about his private life. Artie Shaw was pushed to the point where he walked off the bandstand, left fantastic success.
They all do it, Arnold, and they do it in different degrees, depending on how successful you are.
Have you ever had any regrets about going into show business? Do you
Never.
Think you might have been happier staying in the grocery store?
No way. No way. I've thought about it 100 times. I'm thinking seriously these days about singing less, and but not getting out of the business. I want to stay in the business. I want to be a producer. I want to be a director. I'm doing a lot of writing these days. I'm writing a book on Glenn Miller, The Years in the Army, that I spent with the band. And I've selected about 10 or 12 of the key guys in the Glenn Miller band during the war. And I'm doing personal interviews with them. Each one has a particular story to tell about his relationship with Glenn Miller. And I think in telling the story of each person, that I will be able to tell in depth what kind of a man Glenn Miller really was, because everybody says to me, hey, what kind of a guy was Miller? And you can't answer that in one question, because to me, he was one thing. To Mel Powell, he was something else. To say, Ray McKinley, he was something else altogether different. You see, he was the man for the problem at the moment that the problem was there.
You mentioned Mel Powell as one of the people that you would be interviewing. And in this album, I happened to come up with one called Pearls on Velvet that he composed and played. Did he do that frequently? Was that a crowd?
Well, Mel did a couple of great things. Pearls on Velvet was one of them. And he wrote a great instrumental for the band, a jazz thing that became very popular overseas. And when we came back overseas, became very popular because Benny Goodman did it. It was a thing called Mission to Moscow.
Oh,
he did that while we were in the Army, and it was a great jazz piece, and even today you'll hear it. You know,
sure.
I think Benny Goodman plays it in his library all the time. So Mel, again, had a different set of problems, because Mel was completely jazz-oriented, you know, and here he was playing in a band that was playing some of the most commercial music the world has ever known. But also, again, to Glenn Miller's credit, he didn't stifle Mel Powell. Instead, he helped him to grow also in the Army, because he gave Mel his choice of 7 guys in the band, and Mel put together a jazz group called Uptown Hall, and he gave Mel a broadcast. Mel used to do a couple of 2 or 3 broadcasts a week with his little group called Uptown Hall. It was a 7-piece jazz group with a French horn and everything. And so he let Mel experiment and grow. He didn't say, because we're playing this kind of music, this is all you can do and think about. No, he didn't. He gave me my own show with the whole orchestra, called A Soldier and a Song. I used to do every Sunday afternoon. And I used to sing with the Strings. The Strings had a show called Strings with Wings, you know. And each unit in the band, Ray McKinley had one every morning. We used to be on the air at 8 o'clock. It was called KP Patrol, you know. And there's that thing that Ray wrote that we used to sing, that people still talk about. This Sergeant Ray McKinley saying, how to do, and all the boys and the band saying, how to do, you know, this little thing that he wrote, and we sing it. And so there were so many things about Miller that it's so hard to say what kind of a guy he was in one complete sentence, because it's impossible. You have to tell that story in the eyes of each man that was close to him, he was close to all of us.
Let's back up just a little bit, if we may, Johnny, to that fellow we were talking about before. Here's the genius of Mel Powell and the number that you mentioned. It's called Pearls on Velvet.
Genius indeed of Mel Powell with Glenn Miller's AAF band that's called Pearls on Velvet. You're listening to a one-night stand with the big bands with the Glenn Miller AAF band and our guest, then Sergeant Johnny Desmond. This is Arnold Dane. Johnny, you sang with Gene Krupa's orchestra at one time, didn't you?
I sang with Gene after my group broke up with Bob Crosby. The Bobolinks broke up and I decided I didn't want to be a group singer anymore, so I decided to be a soloist, and I came back to New York and auditioned for different people, and I got the job of singing with Gene Krupa's band. I was with Gene's band for about a year and a half.
When you joined the Army in 1942, did you enlist?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. Enlisted and went to Enid, Oklahoma, where they found out that they were trying to put together a radio unit to recruit and do broadcasting. And a lot of people out of Chicago came to Enid, Oklahoma, specifically for that purpose. But when we finally got down to Enid, we found that the commanding officer of the post that wanted to do this was transferred out a couple of days before we got there. So in that period, I found out that Glenn Miller was breaking up the civilian orchestra and becoming, going into the Air Force and becoming a band leader. And he was looking for guys that were with name bands before the war. And wherever they were. So there happened to be a Downbeat magazine. It found its way into our barracks, and I don't know how. But that was the title story for that week. So I wrote him a letter direct, which you weren't supposed to do. It was supposed to go through channels, you know. But I wrote him direct. He was stationed at Montgomery Field, Alabama at the time. And I gave him my background and everything. And 2 weeks of that day, I got a letter from him saying he would like to have me in his organization. And he started to transfer.
What was it like at Yale University? What were you doing there?
Well, we used to play in the mess hall every afternoon. We used to play for marching, for the cadets that were marching. We used to play concerts in the concert hall at Yale University. And we used, two or three days a week, we would be on the road recruiting, selling bonds, and doing things like that in and around New York, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania. We were on the bus. We weren't doing a broadcast, and then on Saturdays, we would come into New York and do our broadcast, our Saturday night broadcast called I Sustain the Wings.
Let's listen to one of the actual off-the-air recordings from that series, I Sustain the Wings, with the maestro, the late Glenn Miller, doing the introductions himself with a marvelous Miller medley.
Now it's medley time, saluting the mothers, wives, sweethearts, and sisters of the boys in the AM. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. The old song, long, long ago. Something new, Sergeant Johnny Desmond sings, the music stops.
The music stops, but we will. answer, which goes to show that music has charmed the lights below. So we kept on dancing. I felt the glow of you in my arms. The band had left the stand. We were in heaven, dancing on a cloud way off in the blue. The music stopped. But we went on dancing, for we didn't know.
Lieutenant Larry Clinton's theme, Dipsy Doodle. Something Blue, Wabash Blues. Thank you.
Was that the greatest band ever? You're somebody who's been associated
with the band. I would say there isn't a band anywhere like it. You can make that judgment for yourself. I don't know, by the music that you play, the army stuff. Listen to the quality of it and the character of it. But it was a concert orchestra, and Glenn Miller's whole thing in the future was going to be to play concerts, because we had 22 strings and French horn in the band that few people realize. And we were playing all kinds of music. And when you listen to that and then place it up against anything else that was then or now, realizing that this is now 30 years ago that we're talking about, that this stuff was done and how it stands up for today. And you'll have to agree with me that I think the Glenn Miller Air Force Orchestra was probably the greatest band ever put together by anybody.
Come that fateful December 15th of 1944. Now, you were all supposed to go to Paris, as I understand it, for a broadcast on Christmas Day. Was that it?
That's right.
And they had a couple of chartered C-47s, were they?
Three, because in order to transport the whole orchestra, we had to go in three airplanes.
With the equipment.
We were supposed to go December 15th. Excuse me. We completed our schedule of broadcasting because we were doing about 5, 6, 7 shows a day, Arnold, and we had to maintain that broadcasting schedule, and we had to pre-record enough programs to cover a 6-week period when we were going to go over to the continent, and it was during that period. And we did it. We were working day and night to maintain our regular broadcasting schedule and also to pre-record the shows that would be on while we were away doing personal appearances. We were moving up towards the front to play for guys in foxholes and bring the music that they've been listening to a little closer to them. And this was Miller's dream also, bring his music to the guy in the foxhole, you know. And when we completed the broadcasting schedule, Glenn Miller became a major that evening. He got his gold leaves and we had a big party. And the next day he decided to fly to Paris with a Lieutenant Colonel who had his own airplane, and he was allowed to fly anytime he wanted to. If his pilot said, we can go, we can go. So his pilot said, we could make it. And Miller said he wanted to get there a day early so that he could set up a hotel and arrange us for our first concert in Paris. And it was a bad day. Actually, it was three bad days, because it was the time when the Germans were putting all their power together up in Belgium to create the Battle of the Bulge. And this was the day that Glenn Miller left. And so our lieutenant, Don Haynes, took Miller to the airport in Bedford, England, which was about 70 miles out of London, that particular morning. And he said it was truly a day when birds were walking. It was so bad that they stood around there waiting for that airplane. They knew the plane was coming because they could hear the guy, and he landed, strangely enough, taxied up to them. And they got in the plane, said goodbye, and Miller didn't really want to go with the guy, but the colonel was one of those happy Charlies that kept saying, what are you afraid of? You know, Lindbergh flew the whole ocean one motor. He says, we're only going 22 miles across the channel.
I've heard he also said, Miller, do you want to live forever?
Do you want to live forever? He said, why don't you let somebody else enjoy the money that you've made, you know? And Miller, being a very proud guy, this more than anything, the guy rankled him so that he said, okay, Colonel, let's get going, you know. So he got in the plane, really not wanting to, really a man always afraid to fly, a man that was always worried about whether we would be safe when we would return from a flying trip. And he got in the plane with all these things going through his mind. And Lieutenant Haynes said he heard them taxi and take off, and he figured they were safely off the ground, and came back to the barracks, told us we'd see Miller the next day. Well, the next day we went to London, 72 miles in those trucks, and we waited all day for clearance to fly to Paris, and they sent us back to Bedford. And the next morning we did the same thing, and for 3 mornings we did it. Finally, on the 3rd morning, they finally okayed us, and we were the first flight off the ground from London Airport into Orly Field. When we got there and we waited for Miller to show up with a truck or something, and he never did. And Haynes, after about an hour, went up to the control tower to find out if there was a message for the band. And that was the first time we found out that Miller had not arrived there 3 days ago.
You fellows didn't know it at that point?
We didn't know it. Nobody in the world knew it. And nobody knew that Miller was missing until 3 days later when we arrived at Paris at Orly Field looking for him and waiting for him and then reporting that he was missing. And in that particular airplane, they say, if it went into the channel, the wings would float for maybe 24 hours, and the rest of it was a heavy motor, and the non-retractable landing gear would take the whole body of that airplane right under, you know, right underwater immediately, and the wings would break off and float for maybe 24 hours, and that would be the only hope of finding anything would be finding part of the wreckage. But it was 3 days before anybody knew that Miller was missing, so it was over 36 hours, and when finally the report was issued, whatever chance there was of finding any wreckage that might have been floating around in the channel was maybe a day too late. And so to this day, nobody knows whether he landed, whether he was captured by the Germans, whether he was killed, other than in an airplane crash. Nobody knows. Nobody knows.
I know that you give Glenn Miller a great deal of the credit for your success. Do you get any pangs at all when you hear Moonlight Serenade, for example?
Yes, I kind of get a chill and I get a little teary-eyed. I remember when we came home here in the harbor, we were outside on a ship with 5,000 other people, and our band was up on top deck playing as we were passing the Statue of Liberty, and we were playing Moonlight Serenade as we were coming into the harbor, you know.
Wow.
And it was a memory that I can't think about without getting goose pimples and choking up a little bit.
The Glenn Miller AAF Orchestra. We'll hear from the Johnny Desmond of the 70s in just a moment. Clear the floor for 74. Now is the time to visit Russo Chevrolet. They're moving out the 73s to make room for the exciting 74s. You'll find big savings on all the popular Chevy models, but that's not all. Russo is featuring special deals on their stock of used and demonstrator Chevrolets. Now, wouldn't you like to own a durable, completely reconditioned and clean used car from Russo? The demonstrators have been used by Russo salesmen themselves and have always been kept in the best shape possible. Russo used cars are thoroughly checked and repaired by trained mechanics, so you can be sure you'll have a reliable car you'll be proud to own. Either car you choose, used or demonstrator, Russo is offering you savings of up to $1,200 on some cars. Don't wait another day. Visit Russo Chevrolet soon and help them clear the floor for 74. The selection is great. The savings are fantastic. That's Russo Chevrolet, just minutes from Hartford. Take I-91 to the Bradley exit, then your first exit to Russo Chevrolet, across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Johnny Desmond has had several major record hits, the Yellow Rose of Texas, Stacy Bones, Symphony, The High and the Mighty. He's appeared in every major supper club throughout the United States. He's a gifted television actor. He appeared opposite Dorothy Collins in the Hit Parade for years. He was on Broadway co-starring with David Wayne and Vivian Blaine in Say Darling. And, of course, opposite Barbara Streisand as Nicky Arnstein in Funny Girl for 2 years. And Johnny Desmond is also a cruise ship entertainer away for 2 weeks at a time with the voice of Johnny Desmond.
Untouchable, they said you were untouchable. A dream to see, but not a dream to untouchable. Could you be so untouchable that you could turn a love away and leave my warm heart cold? That such as I could reach for such as you.
That's a marvelous recording. We hope it's a big success for Johnny Desmond. One last question for our guest. What about the young person trying to make it in the business today?
If we're talking to people, to young, talented people, I think that the answer is to get a basic knowledge of your business, to study music. A lot of singers today are lucky because they're with groups and they're naturals, and they get lucky right away, and they really don't get the basic training that they're going to need later on. But the other thing I would say is the only thing that really sells is the person's honesty. And if you're going to remain in this business and you're going to become anything at all, it's because you are yourself. One moment when I thought I was doing very, very wonderfully with the Glenn Miller Band, he called me over and said, I want to talk to you. It was after a broadcast. And he said to me, now, who do you think you're going to be next week? And I said, I don't understand, sir. He said, well, today you sound like a little like Sinatra, last week a little like Tony Martin, and the week before that a little like Bing Crosby. He said, now, when I asked for you in this orchestra, I wanted me a Johnny Desmond singer. Do you know what that means? I said, well, I thought that's who I am. He said, that's who you are, he said, but that's not who you're sounding like. You're trying to sound like all these other people. He said, now I want to tell you something. As long as there's an original around, he said, nobody wants to listen to an imitation. He said, now it looks like Mr. Sinatra is going to be in the Army in the next couple of days, so if I want him, I can have him. I don't need the guy that's imitating him, but I can get the real thing. He said, now if you don't start singing like Johnny Desmond next week, he said, I'm going to send you away and get me one of those guys that you're imitating. So that's my advice to anybody. I would say, learn how to be yourself. And that is the most difficult thing in the world, to be yourself and to project what you are when you're working.
Well said, John. I know your schedule is extremely busy, and I appreciate your taking this hour out of it for us.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you so very much.
A great entertainer and a warm and personable guest, Johnny Desmond. former singing sergeant with the late Glenn Miller's AAF band. It's a pleasure to have had Johnny and the Miller Music on our one-night stand with the big bands. Our location and studio engineer was Bob Sherrago. Tonight's program was produced and edited by Brian Hartman.
The men, the band, the guns, in the stride. With their old chapeau to each and every guy. To discourage in the blue and the things he learned to do. He's a part of a team and right on the beam. For you, when you, when you. Hail the men, the band, the guns, in the sky. Both the men with wings that they go thundering high. Everyone's a lucky seven and they give them good from heaven. Hail the men, the band, the guns, in the sky.
Our next one-night stand on Thursday, September 6th, will feature Cy Oliver recalling the music of Tommy Dorsey. Tonight's program has been brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Russo wants you to help them clear the floor for 74. Get a great Chevy at a low price from Russo. This is Arnold Dane.